Hello, I'm Richard Gisbert, and you're at The Listening Post. This week, BP, the oil spill, and the environmental and PR calamity in the Gulf of Mexico.
Have we all gone crazy? I don't mean you. I mean us, the media.
Pulling the plug on Hamas TV, the decision to knock Al-Aqsa off a French satellite. Riz Ahmed and the political power of new media. And what on Middle Earth is with the vuvuzelas? There's a public relations battle being waged on the American airwaves and in the country's newspapers. It pits a corporation, BP, against the most powerful politician in the world, President Barack Obama. They're fighting over how to handle the worst environmental disaster in American history, the continuing oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico. For BP, the spill was a PR problem that's ballooned into a potential brand killer and put the company's multi-billion dollar business in jeopardy. The White House wants BP and its CEO, Tony Hayward, to take the hit in order to shield the Obama administration from the political fallout. Caught in the media crossfire are the journalists, those trying to cover the spill. This is one story that neither BP nor the White House want to lose control over. And the information police and spin doctors are out in force from the shores of Louisiana to Florida to Washington, D.C. Our starting point this week is the Gulf of Mexico, a story that's pitted two huge media machines against one another in a fight to manage the message.
Every day that this oil gushes into the Gulf, the rumblings grow louder in Washington.
I think for BP and the White House, the battle is over public relations.
BP is responsible for this horrific disaster.
This is your worst nightmare, basically, if you're in public relations.
I want to see the boot on the neck of BP tonight. I want to see some finger pointing.
I think that the message that the White House is trying to give out is that they're not going to let anyone be able to walk away from this.
We will make BP pay for the damage their company has caused.
And the White House has done that, ordering BP to set aside $20 billion for the cleanup. But what the president cannot do is get the oil giant to repair the damage this story has done to his own reputation.
This has been a very difficult period for the White House and the administration, but it's also been particularly bad for the president because it is of such a magnitude and scope, and the federal government does not have the technology or the expertise to close a gushing oil well. So it's become a political problem for the president because Republicans have seized on it as him being weak.
He would not be in this situation right now if he'd shown leadership from the beginning.
The initial feeling was that Obama was detached from this, that maybe he was giving too much control with BP over how this was being dealt with. But we've seen him step up his message very aggressively over the last few weeks.
What I don't want to hear is
his anger is starting to match the anger of the people on the Gulf Coast.
Shareholders and spending that kind of money on TV advertising that they're nickel and diming fishermen.
President Obama also faced a media barrage over not just his actions, but his demeanor.
Critics are now talking about your style, and they're saying, here's a guy who likes to be known as cool and calm and collected, and this isn't the time for cool, calm, and collected.
I'm going to push back hard on this because I think that this is an idea that got in folks' heads, and the media's run with it. And I don't always have time to perform for the benefit of the cable shows.
But in that very same interview, the president did exactly that.
And I don't sit around just talking to experts because this is a college seminar. We talk to these folks because they potentially had the best answers, so I know who's asked to kick.
Have we all gone crazy? I don't mean you, I mean us, the media.
There were some voices of dissent, however, on the U.S. airwaves about what was being said on the U.S. airwaves.
What purpose would be served by having the president scream or cry or whatever it is he's supposed to do to show emotion? Would it plug the hole? This whole discussion is a terrible example of how the media can trivialize political discussion.
However, it was exactly the kind of distraction BP needed.
Mounting outrage over the continuing oil leak.
The media's knives were out for the company, and its public face, CEO Tony Hayward, was not helping. He was a public relations liability.
My guess is that Tony Hayward assumed this role without thinking. He was either ill-advised or refused advice, and the results are catastrophic for the company, for the brand, and in the end for his own career.
Well, in the United States, we'd like to see the leaders of the corporation step forward. I think it's very reassuring to the average American citizen to see the head of a company step forward. Unfortunately, Tony Hayward, his message has not matched with what's really happening. He's continually misspoke, everywhere from saying that the Gulf is a very large body of water and that this is not a big problem.
The overall environmental impact of this will be very, very modest.
To all of a sudden saying,
there's no one who wants this thing over more than I do. You know, I'd like my life back.
Hayward's disastrous media performance hurt the BP brand to such an extent the company quickly turned around a major ad campaign to limit the corporate damage.
I'm Tony Hayward.
They put out a $50 million television advertisement.
We will get this done. We will make this right.
And the company tried other ways to stem the negative coverage. It hired a high-profile, well-connected Washington PR and lobbying firm, Brunswick Group, and it tried to keep reporters off the beaches and away from the oil slicks.
When we tried to reach the beach, seen here and covered in oil, a boat of BP contractors with two Coast Guard officers on board told us to turn around under threat of arrest.
This is not ours.
The newspapers and the networks were full of such stories. A corporation controlling access to public property, controlling access to the story.
There was a photographer from the New Orleans Times-Picayune, the local newspaper, and they wanted to do a flyover of the oil rig and to see the oil sheen on the surface of the ocean. And initially, the FAA, which controls the airspace there, denied their request, and they basically said it's up to BP. The news organization was dumbfounded by that because it's not up to BP.
The media will have uninhibited access anywhere we're doing operations.
The administration said reporters should be able to go where they wanted to go, but that wasn't the case.
All right, well, I can tell you firsthand, people are not following that.
Which has people asking, for all of the criticism by the White House of BP, some of it quite personal and aimed directly at CEO Tony Hayward, are the politicians and the oil men at the heart of this story really at odds? Or do they share an informational agenda?
I think the impression we get from much of the media coverage is that White House and BP are on opposite sides. In reality, they're pursuing some of the very same goals. I think it's important to think of this as BP has a problem with containing an oil spill. BP and the White House have a problem containing unwanted information from spilling out into the public arena.
And that's a problem for the media and the Americans who rely on them for answers to questions like, how did this happen? How bad is the damage? Who's to blame? And who, apart from the marine life and the wildlife, will pay?
And here's how our Global Village Voices see the PR war being waged in the media between BP and the White House.
It seems clear now that President Obama has trounced BP in the war they've been waging with each other in the media. And it's an important victory for Obama because it is vitally important for him to be now seen in the media as actively dealing with this problem, or he's going to wind up like one of those pelicans on the beach covered with an oily glop from which he will never recover.
As a news viewer, I'd like to know as much as possible about what's happening at the site of the spill. I can understand BP's concerns about journalists maybe getting in the way, but at the same time, it's absolutely in BP's interest to be as open and transparent as possible.
During this unfolding crisis, BP has been getting most of the attention by the media, and deservedly so. But it's important that the media also look at the other companies that are operating in similar conditions. Shell, for example, has just gone into production in the Gulf of Mexico at a depth of 6 Empire State Buildings. I think it's really important that the media cast a critical eye on all these controversial projects and bring greater scrutiny to bear on the political establishment and the industry.
If you've got an opinion on the media that you'd like to get on the air as one of our Global Village Voices, the best way to do that is through either Facebook or Twitter. Our pages there will tell you what stories we're working on in case you want to weigh in. Or you can just get in touch with us via email at listeningpost@aljazeera.net. Time now for Listening Post News Bites. The Gaza-based Al-Aqsa TV channel is in danger of losing most of its foreign viewership. That's because Al-Aqsa's French-based satellite provider to Europe and parts of the Arab world, Eutelsat, has been told to stop transmitting its broadcasts, which could cut about 70% of Al-Aqsa's viewership. A spokesman for Eutelsat said that the order to drop Al-Aqsa's signal from the satellite came from the French broadcasting regulator, the CSA, which alleges that the Hamas-backed TV channel incites hatred. No specific broadcasts were cited in the decision, but the CSA was probably referring to programs like this one, which depicts a Hamas fighter gunning down an Israeli soldier. Al-Aqsa TV attracted many viewers in the Arab world and in Europe during last year's Israeli war on Gaza, in which the Israeli military prevented most of the global news media from entering the war zone to document the story. The world's biggest media baron, News Corp's Rupert Murdoch, is now testing the waters in Britain for the first time since Prime Minister David Cameron's Conservative coalition took power. Murdoch, who already controlled the country's biggest satellite broadcaster, BSkyB, has made an $11.5 billion bid for the 61% of the company he doesn't already own. The shareholders are apparently holding out for an improved offer, but the more interesting angle to this story could turn out to be the regulatory aspect. Murdoch already owns the UK's biggest newspaper, The Sun, as well as The Times of London and The Sunday Times. He has traditionally supported Conservative politicians, so David Cameron is not expected to oppose this, although the European Commission could conceivably get in the way. Rupert Murdoch has much less influence in Brussels than he does in 10 Downing Street. The Philippines remains one of the most hazardous countries in the world in which to practice journalism. Three more journalists have been gunned down in separate incidents in less than a week. Joselito Agustin, a host for DZJC Axion Radio in Laog City, was ambushed by two gunmen. Police suspect the motive might have been criticism of local politicians whom he called corrupt. Desiderio Kamangyan of Sunrise FM Radio in Mati City was shot and killed while judging a singing competition there. He had been critical of deforestation practices in that part of the country. And Nestor Bedolido, a writer at a paper called Castigador in Digo City, was murdered as he left a bar. The motive there is still unclear, but police have not ruled out that it was related to his work. According to the media watchdog group, Reporters Without Borders, 137 journalists have been killed since President Gloria Arroyo first took power 9 years ago. Earlier this year, we did a piece on a media law being proposed in Iceland, the goal of which was to create a safe haven there to protect journalists and media around the world from repressive governments and things like harsh libel laws. Now, that law, known as the Icelandic Modern Media Initiative, has been unanimously passed by the parliament in Iceland. The legislation was kind of a cut-and-paste job, combining some of the most liberal source protection laws, freedom of speech laws, and libel laws from countries such as Sweden, Belgium, and the United States. The authorities in Iceland teamed up with the whistleblowing website WikiLeaks and its founder, Julian Assange, to write the legislation. The idea was to shield non-Icelandic journalists under the law by having outsiders base their websites on Icelandic servers. It's going to be interesting to see how many foreign journalists actually do that and how many foreign governments will recognize Iceland's jurisdiction in any legal cases that may arise. We're back after the break with a piece on new media, music, film, and politics, the world of Riz Ahmed, a.k.a. Riz MC. Welcome back. We're delving into the Listening Post archives once again this week to spend some time with a gifted and opinionated young British actor and musician, Riz Ahmed, who raps under the name Riz MC. Longtime viewers of the Listening Post may remember that we ran his music video, Post 9/11 Blues, as one of our first web videos of the week. It was a commentary on the lives of young Muslims in the West during the post 9/11 era, and some people considered it to be a touch insensitive. His second video, Sour Times, caught our eye as well because of this line: "I'm losing my religion to tomorrow's headlines." We thought that his message, what it said about Islamophobia and the mainstream news media, were ideas worth exploring then and worth taking a second look at now. The Listening Post's Salah Kadar got together with Riz Ahmed last year to get his thoughts on why, given the state of mainstream media, he finds new media outlets the most effective way to communicate with his target audience.
His most recent work on the big screen was in Four Lions, a controversial British comedy about a group of bumbling would-be suicide bombers, focusing on a touchy subject and playing it for laughs. The film had both critics and commentators talking, and it's not the first time Riz Ahmed has found himself on contentious ground. Beyond the silver screen, web surfers are familiar with another side of Ahmed's creative talent, his viral music videos. His most recent video release is called Hundreds and Thousands. As a rapper, he's known as Riz MC, and he has a penchant for political content. This video is all about the banking industry, the ones governments called too big to fail. You can call me Robin Hood, boss, we don't want handouts, just keep your hands off my When we sat down with Riz MC, we asked him about his first viral hit, Post 9/11 Blues. It was released in 2006. It turned some heads, raised eyebrows, but struggled to get airplay on radio or television.
Post 9/11 Blues was my first ever song, really. Mainstream media really didn't want to play the song, whether radio or TV stations. They felt nervous about it. So what I did was I put it online and let it gather momentum there. And that created its own kind of online outrage. Everybody do the Post 9/11 dance. Look scared, shake your ass while the bombs go blast. Everybody shake your Post 9/11 thongs. All the dossier was wrong, Jackson Oil drop a bomb. I released the song Post 9/11 Blues way before I released Sour Times. And I thought that was more palatable, more digestible, you know, to kind of inject the whole issue with a bit of humour.
The song for Riz MC's video, Sour Times, was actually written at the same time as Post 9/11 Blues, but the video was held back until last year.
I didn't perform Sour Times for a long time. I just thought it would be too seen as too hardcore for people. And I think at the time, in 2005, 2006, if I had performed that song in a lot of context, I think people would have felt nervous because Islamophobic sentiment was so high. And now it's Post 7/7. Why are they calling it that? They're trying to link it to New York, like we're all under attack from the same big bad guy. But it's taking the piss. Because the truth is, Al-Qaeda doesn't really exist. This song was about sour times we were living in. And particularly at that time, there was definitely quite an ugly drumbeat of Islamophobia in the media. They'd open up newspapers and it would talk in terms of we and they being Muslims, as though, you know, the editors or the journalists could never imagine that a Muslim might be reading this newspaper, this mainstream newspaper, or watching this, you know, mainstream news channel. So in these sour times, please allow me to vouch for mine. Bitter taste in my mouth, spit it out with a rhyme. I'm losing my religion to tomorrow's headlines. Forest Gate, sorry mate, nah, nothing is fine.
One of the faces lip-syncing the lines is that of the video's director, Farah Drabu.
It's upsetting after a while to see the media misrepresent a religion. And so when he's saying, I'm losing my religion to tomorrow's headlines, he's kind of explaining to people that, you know, it's not good what you're seeing in the headlines, and I'm feeling really sad about it. And, you know, on that basis, I'm writing the song.
The video employs a simple, effective method of amplifying Riz MC's message by using many different faces and nationalities to mouth his words.
I think with Sour Times, it is coming from an Islamic perspective, but it's not making an Islamic point. It is a point of view that people from all different backgrounds, all different ages and all different nationalities hold, which is that terrorism and radicalization is less to do with religion and less to do with the inherent nature of a people and much more to do with economics and politics and how people feel excluded and how people feel that in whatever twisted way they can make an impact and be counted. So listen, terrorism isn't caused by religion or an old school vision of Islam. It's against the Quran and it's a new innovation caused by mashup situations. That's what makes them turn to arms.
The idea behind us shooting this video was to get as many people to contribute and get their faces on the screen, because I think it's a view that a lot of people think maybe people in the West don't hold. These days we've got web cameras, we've got mobiles, we've got so many ways of filming ourselves and sending it to other people. So people would film themselves in America and send it over to me, and then I'd just cut it into the video, and that was how he did it. So David's taking out Goliath and his wife and his dog, segregated,
castrated, now we see who's on top. The video is not short on irony. The mainstream media are part of the message, and Riz MC has gone around the news media onto the web to deliver it.
So it felt right, you know, given that that's how we created a lot of the video, to debut it online as well. The misguided turn violent, strap themselves up with bombs, but they're still cowards because they ain't here when the backlash is on.
virals are really the way forward these days to get stuff seen. When you think about it, more people are watching the internet than they are the television now. It's more authentic that it's a viral because no one is pushing it to you. It's the artist himself has done that, uploaded it, and you know it's there for anyone to see.
The internet is a really important way of kind of sometimes forcing your way into the mainstream media, but I think increasingly bypassing it altogether.
So all the mans that want to say that my religion has to change, that we're stuck in a bygone age.
I'm happy with it being out there in the giant free-for-all of the internet and people passing it on like that.
Write me a check, we can all get along.
And with hundreds, thousands, and now millions of clicks on his viral videos, Riz MC is making bypassing the mainstream media an art form. Hundreds and thousands.
Finally, football fans around the globe have had it up to here with the vuvuzelas at the World Cup. They're the people blowing on the horns of South Africa, creating a constant din at all the games there. Broadcasters are complaining that their announcers cannot be heard. Players are complaining that they can't hear their teammates when they call for the ball. But non-football fans seem to love the vuvuzelas and the festival atmosphere that they bring to the tournament. There's a TV show in Norway you've never heard of. It's called Pistol Shrimps. And they've mashed up some vuvuzela action into a trailer from the Lord of the Rings film series. Now, doesn't sound like that would work, but tell that to the more than 1.1 million people who've already gone online to watch our web video of the week. We'll see you next time at the Listening Post.
The ring must be cast back into the fires of Mount Doom.
I cannot do this alone.
You have my sword.
And you have my bow.
My vuvuzela.
Oh,